Back together again, you and I chatting it up, wrapping up a busy week, Friday style, April 24th, 2026, on Connecticut Today. We welcome to the show Joe DeLong, the head of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. He chatted about a new upcoming Citizens Assembly slated to look at local property tax issues around the state and maybe some solutions. 16th District GOP State Senator Rob Sampson dropped by to update pending bills at the state capitol. And I also talked about some surprising poll numbers from a new survey of Connecticut voters regarding the possible use of photo IDs at polling places for federal elections. And you know how sometimes I'll sit in back of the mic here and foam at the mouth saying, hey, we have so many supposedly smart people in this state that we either don't ask their opinions on certain things or they have their set opinions and we don't do any creative thinking. Well, guess what? Some creative thinking may be on the horizon. This one about property taxes. Yeah, what to do about them, how to lower them, is there a better formula? And a few groups, I think four groups, are taking part in what's being called a Citizens Assembly. Real people from various walks of life getting together and looking at each other and saying, all right, here's the problem. Can we make it any better? Joe DeLong is the boss at the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. Check them out online, ccm-ct.org. They're taking a major part in this Citizens Assembly. Joe, good afternoon. Good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Paul, except it's almost 4 o'clock on Friday, and I drank my last energy drink for the week yesterday, so I'm hitting the wall.
Yeah, I was doing that. I cut back on that, but I got to tell you, I have a little sip of 5-hour energy every day before the show, but don't tell my doctor, Joe, okay?
I'm to the point today where I feel like I had a 5-hour energy about 8 hours ago.
So all right, I'll take it easy on you, Joe, and I know you're going
to
come back, I think, Monday with Melissa, but listen, Joe, talk about this. I always say we're not talking to maybe people in the state who should be talked to. So talk about this Citizens Assembly here.
Well, first off, let me say this. Citizens Assemblies are nothing new. They've been done in Europe for years, very, very successfully. They've been done across entire countries. France has held Citizens Assemblies across the entire country, mm-hmm. and been very successful in taking on some very challenging issues. They've been done a couple times in the United States. Washington State did one on climate that I understand was pretty successful, and mm-hmm. there was something similar done in New Hampshire that was successful as well. But you know, really, the idea is to take something that elected officials just can't get their arms around, just can't come to an agreement to. Maybe it's through a lack of courage. Maybe it's through a lack of, whatever the case may be. Maybe it's fear. Maybe it's listening to too many special interest groups. Mm-hmm. And take the issue to the regular citizens of the state and say, here it is. We're going to put you on top. We're going to put you on top, and we're going to put all the experts on tap. So the experts aren't going to lead this. You're going to lead it, and you're going to be able to learn by reaching out and saying, I want to talk to this expert and understand the issues, and then bring forward your recommendations on how to deal with it. And I've been in Connecticut now for 11 years, mm-hmm. and I can tell you that we are saying and doing the same things today that we were saying and doing when I got here 11 years ago. Mm. And when I go back through our archives, we were saying and doing those same things 20 years before that. So it's time to take a different approach to what is an issue, the issue of this Citizens Assembly being property taxes, but is an issue that is really creating a major unaffordability crisis in our state. Yeah. It's affecting everyone. It's affecting homeowners. It's driving up rent for renters. It's having negative consequences on its over-reliance on public education. It's hitting us in all walks of life. The politicians don't seem to be solving it in Hartford. So this is an opportunity to bring up regular citizens from all across the state, meeting all demographics, to see if they can take a crack at it, make recommendations as to what they want in their state and what they want in their communities.
Joe, how did you find these people? Where'd you get them? And what kind of cross-section are we looking at here on this?
Sure. Well, first off, I don't find them. This is something that's done through a best practices process. It's yep. called a sortition process. And what will happen is next week sometime, probably about 200,000 residents across the state will get a letter in the mail asking them if this is something they would be interested in participating in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are, they're directed to a website where they put in their unique code and they answer a series of questions. And those series of questions are not, you know, how do you feel about certain issues, but it's really all their demographic questions. Okay. Make sure we have that full cross sector.
Yeah.
And, you know, they'll go in and they'll put in their, you know, their age and their economic status and, you know, whether they're a renter, whether they're a homeowner, whether they have children, what they're, you know, all those types of things. And then, you know, there's an AI generated process that starts going through that, find all the people who said they were interested. It almost becomes like a lottery.
Wow.
To make sure that they're meeting all of the demographics of the state, urban, suburban, rural, wealthy, poor, party affiliation. What you want is, at the end, you want 100 people in a room that match the demographic of what the demographic
sure.
of Connecticut is, you know, so they're a very good representative sampling of the residents of Connecticut.
Interesting. And the term of this, how long will this go, Joe? And will there be a report issued at the end? And if so, who's going to get copies?
Yeah, well, the you know, thankfully, one of the partners here, too, is our state comptroller, Sean Scanlon.
Sure.
So that's really important because this is the first Citizens Assembly that we're aware of in the U.S. that has been partnered
wow.
with or sponsored by a state office holder.
Wow.
So that's huge because that really takes their voice and elevates their voice. Comptroller Scanlon is, you know, like you said, I don't know if I'll agree with everything they come up with. But I'm going to elevate their voice and make sure that it gets a hearing and make sure that these recommendations are heard at the State House.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important. But it'll run across, it'll start in July. It'll run across 6 weekends. 4 of those weekends will be in person. 2 of those weekends will be virtual.
Yeah.
And the citizens who are ultimately selected, you know, it's much like jury duty for public policy.
Yeah.
The citizens who ultimately are chosen will be compensated for their time as well.
Excellent. Interesting. And do you know, Joe, I think you mentioned this earlier, in the European nations that have done this in other states, have these ideas on, I think you said one was on the environment, there were other ones, have any of their ideas or even some recommendations actually made their way into law that you know of or not?
Yes, yes. So in many areas, the answer is yes, that they've made their way into law. Interestingly enough, in some countries and in some places that have done these, they have been authorized, you know, through a parliament or through a statute, that whatever the citizens came up with automatically became law.
Wow.
So that's the, you know, the process here isn't working quite that way. We're not involved to that point yet.
Hey, Joe, put me on one of those commissions where it's automatic. I'll have a field day, man. I don't know.
Oh, you have a lot of fun, right?
Joe, that's great. Please keep us up to date on this. This is fascinating, as Joe DeLong said, from CCM, probably as far as people figure, the first ever Citizens Assembly here in the U.S., trying to tackle, you know, property taxes. And Joe, you and I know, I mean, I just talked to a real estate agent, right, about property taxes. It is horrible. It's killing home sales. It's preventing seniors from selling their home and using that as a nest egg for retirement. Folks, go to the website ccm-ct.org, the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. Joe DeLong is the boss there. Joe, thanks. Keep us up to date on this, okay?
Paul, I appreciate your time. You have a great weekend.
Appreciate it, Joe. Thank you. Joe DeLong, CCM. All right, let's check in with one of our regulars here, Republican State Senator Rob Sampson, 16th District. Man, it was a busy week up at the state capitol. Let's talk to Rob right now. Rob, how you doing, man? A lot going on up there. How you been?
Oh, you're not kidding, Paul. It's a crazy house. Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's knock off a couple of these bills here. Give us the update here. Okay, a homeschooling bill. I understand that the curriculum part of it is gone. And describe what it is now, Rob, where there's only supposed to be, what, one check-in with DCF? How is that going to work?
to be totally honest with you, Paul, I don't really know the state of the bill currently. It passed out of the House of Representatives, yeah. I'm aware, yesterday, late, but I was there late doing my own thing, battling the vaccine bill.
Okay.
And I haven't looked at what actually transpired, although I understand it's still a very bad bill that's still going to put the onus on folks that choose to educate their children themselves to have to, you know, prove themselves innocent, you know, instead of, you know, having to be innocent until proven guilty.
And I, you know, Rob, I continue to wonder why this is, from a purely political point of view, okay, Rob, tactical point of view, left versus right, right versus left, whatever, why this is being done in an election year. I mean, if I was really hot and heavy, like many of the Dems are, on something like, on anything for that matter, whether it's homeschooling or vaccines or whatever, you can just wait till after election day. Or, Rob, does this maybe indicate they're not that confident as to what may happen in November?
It's hard to say, Paul. I mean, if I had to say, I would say it's actually the opposite. I think that they are in a position of extreme confidence and arrogance. You know, they were looking at potentially losing seats in the last legislative election because I think crime was a big issue. I think affordability was a big issue. I think Republicans definitely do better on those items. And then the municipal election came, and again, the Democrats prevailed. They ended up with a better result than they had anticipated. And now they're walking around like they can do anything at all. And I look at a lot of these bills, the homeschooling bill, the vaccine bill, the gun bill that we're going to probably see in the Senate this this coming week. All of that is a message to Connecticut residents who are freedom-minded, intelligent, you know, thoughtful citizens of our state, that they're not welcome here. That, that, that if you're somebody who thinks for yourself and you don't want to be a dependent on the Connecticut State Democrats, you're not, you're just not welcome. You should, you're better off leaving. It's a terrible thing to say, but I can't describe it in any other way. There's no reason for these bills. This gun bill that they're doing, it's just a bunch of cockamamie nonsense. They're doing it just to show off that they can be hostile to people that do not support them.
And about that gun bill, let's talk about that, Rob, because I know that this was very, very emotional up there. And it was interesting. I looked at the roll call vote on the part that ended up passing the House. And what was it, 15 Democrats, kind of a wide variety of Democrats, voted with the Republicans on this, did they not? What have you talked to any of those people, any of your lawmaker friends there that have sided with the GOP on the gun bill? Because I saw the names and where they were from, and I thought that was kind of interesting. Did that hit you?
I would be a little... Yeah, I'd be a little hesitant to say that there's a blanket reason why some of the Democrats joined Republicans. But the few people that I have talked to, I think that they recognize the absurdity of it all, that the bill is patently unconstitutional. I mean, the last constitutional decision basically laid out very clearly that items that are in current use cannot be banned. And what's more in current use than a Glock handgun? I mean, I mean, it's like one of the most common and prevalent firearms in the entire country. And of course, this bill doesn't accomplish anything. I mean, you're gonna ban one specific firearm. It'll just be replaced with a different firearm in the hands of criminals who don't care about the law anyway. All you're doing is hassling law-abiding citizens. But to get in the minds of the Democrats, I really think that some of the more urban Democrats are recognizing that you know they're disarming their own people, and they're starting to think twice about it, which is a good thing. Not enough to make a difference in the outcome of these votes, I'm afraid.
Rob Sampson is the guest, 16th District Republican State Senate member. We're talking about the week that soon will be gone in the General Assembly. And Rob, it's interesting because what the proponents of that bill are arguing that they want to prevent is already criminal, right? You're not somebody, now I'm not a gun owner, I'm not an NRA or a CCDL person, but you're not supposed to modify guns to begin with, right?
Of course. Yeah, no, they already have laws on the books that say what is, you know, eligible for ownership in the state of Connecticut and what hoops you have to go through to obtain it and actually buy back your Second Amendment right. They've already got that all on the books. You know, I made the example of a sawed-off shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want to sell firearms because they could potentially be modified.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, we're going to still sell shotguns, right? I mean, all you'd have to do to make a sawed-off shotgun, right, is saw it off, right? But the fact of the matter is that, you know, it just shows the lack of logic on all of these things. This is not about genuine policy.
Mm-hmm.
This is not about coming up with something that's truly beneficial to the people of Connecticut. It's not going to stop any crime. It's not going to do anything except hassle a bunch of people that don't support the Democrats.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole point of it.
And Rob, I was talking about, and I'm sure this came up in the debate with you and the other legislators on this gun bill. I was talking to Democrats, and I maybe some Democrats in the audience about folks. I said, listen, if you've ever seen a 3D printer, these things are fascinating. And from what I understand, you don't need to go to the underhanded gun, you know, tool and die guy anymore or machinist, you know, slip them a couple of $100 to modify your gun. You can do it in the comfort of your home. And these 3D printers, Rob, can fashion these parts that any criminal can use to do this.
Right. Well, I mean, it's as simple as this, Paul. I mean, I have not debated this bill yet. This bill only has gone through the House. It will be coming to the Senate, and
mm-hmm.
I can let your listeners know that I'm going to do everything in my power to try and stop them, and I'll be offering a lot of amendments, and we'll be doing a lot of talking about what this bill
you
is.
Are, you are Captain Amendment up there, aren't you?
My latest count of potential amendments is over 100.
Are you serious?
File, but I have quite a stack of amendments. And the issue is that they want to go after the potential of something happening.
Sure,
you know, the possession of a machine gun might be a criminal item already in the state of Connecticut. And if you had a Glock handgun that was modified so that it didn't work as a semi-automatic anymore and more like an automatic, that's already illegal. What they're trying to do is to say if you own a firearm that could potentially be modified into something else, then, of course, now that's a crime as well. It's crazy. That's why I used the shotgun example, because, I mean, once you start down that road, I mean, we're not talking, you don't even need a 3D printer for a lot of this stuff. I mean,
really?
All you need to change a shotgun to a sawed-off shotgun is a hacksaw, right?
It's a saw.
And I think that to make this change in the Glocks, I mean, maybe you need a drill? I don't know. I mean, are they going to outlaw drills next?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Rob Sampson. All right, so Rob, thanks. Now, what's first up come Monday? Give us a little hint here. What's on the docket Monday in the Senate? Do you know yet?
We are not in on Monday, amazingly.
All right.
They are going to start Tuesday at 10 a.m.
Okay.
And they're threatening a potential late night for Friday and maybe even Saturday. But they have not given us any indication of what bills are coming other than the fact that we do know that House Bill 5043, the Glock ban, is definitely coming, and presumably so is the homeschool legislation that they passed in the House.
Okay. Let me ask you one more thing.
It's going to be an ugly week.
Yeah, I've always wondered this. When you guys and gals are there late at night, do you get, like, DoorDash? Are there pizza deliveries? Does somebody come in with a six-pack of Coke? What? Because you guys, I mean, you're there till midnight, Rob. I mean, come on, there's got to be food, right? Is there or is there not?
Oh, yes, there's food and all of the above, and we make do very well. And I am very fortunate to have Bonnie on our staff. Takes very good care of me.
Nice.
She keeps a stash of Famous Amos chocolate chip cookies in case I need it. And I got loads of friends, Paul, that'll come by if I need them. You know, at midnight, I need a coffee. I hit Dunkin' and come see me. They'll do
nice.
That. So it's good.
Nice. Rob Sampson. Rob, thanks as always. Have a good weekend. We'll talk to you down the road. Thanks, Rob.
Really appreciate you, Paul. Thank
appreciate it, Rob Sampson. So I was scouring high and low how to put the issues of the day in order today that you and I may, you know, may talk about them, may bander and bounce them around here. And I noticed with my keen little freshly checked at the ophthalmologist brown eyes here that the University of New Hampshire had released another part of their nutmeg poll. Now, you know, we did this the other day where it showed that Governor Ned Lamont still had a healthy lead over a possible primary challenger in Josh Elliott. We looked at the governor's overall standing in his his job approval and all that. Well, what the University of New Hampshire likes to do is they like to stagger the release here of stuff. So the second release is a lot more interesting and has a really a eureka moment or two more than the first release. So follow along with me here. I'm looking at the heading here of the Nutmeg State poll that's actually done by the University of New Hampshire. And I'm looking at this, and I see this headline here. Approval of Trump's foreign policy drops in Connecticut. And I say, well, okay, yeah, nothing crazy there. And then the second part of the headline, talk about bearing the lead here. That's an old newspaper phrase from when I worked in papers for a good few years. A majority support federal election changes. And I went, what? Wait a minute. Trump-hating Connecticut actually likes some of the stuff he wants to do about elections? And I said, well, let's look at this. So I scroll down here, and I see, all right, his job performance here in Connecticut, his job rating sucks. He's like 38 or 39%. All right, it's a blue state. Okay? Then I get to this. You ready for this? Because if you mention this idea to Governor Lamont or our Attorney General William Tong or our Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas or our Lieutenant Governor Susan Bicewicz or any, you know, black or Hispanic leaders around here or anybody who loves to use the D word, you would think that, again, they would probably come back, well, this is Jim Crow 2.0. But I read this. Three quarters. That's at least 75%, kids, for you folks who have trouble with numbers. Three quarters of Connecticut residents support requiring a photo ID to vote in federal elections. What? In blue Connecticut? How can that be, Grandma? And majorities in blue Connecticut support other changes to federal election laws. Two-thirds of Connecticut residents say the country is headed in the wrong direction. All right, so we'll get to that later. But having said that, how about them there, apples? Three-quarters of Connecticut residents support requiring a photo ID to vote in federal elections. Wait a minute. I thought that's racist. I thought that, here it is, all together with me, disenfranchises. I thought that disenfranchises people. How about that? How are we to get into that, boys and girls? And again, this is really no surprise here because you remember there was that poll out, a Pew Research poll a couple of months ago, that said 83% of Americans support voter ID for federal elections, including healthy majorities of black, white, and Hispanic voters. Democrats, Republicans, Independents. Now, you may say, well, why? Somebody online said, what are you mentioning this before? For again, you've done this before. Well, yeah, because every time I see a poll or somebody saying, hey, we have verification on this again, I ask myself, well, why do the powers that be, at least in some states like Connecticut, why do they keep telling us it's racist when solid majorities of black and Hispanic voters apparently don't think it's racist? Can somebody explain to me this, please? I don't get it. I don't understand it. Can you imagine if Republicans blocked something that 83% of Americans say they approve of? You may, you know, you could all say that with, you know, maybe national health care or something like that. But, man, this is throwing me for a loop again here. And we'll get into the numbers momentarily. Three quarters of Connecticut residents in a blue state, when asked by the University of New Hampshire's Nutmeg poll, they support as in they're in favor of, requiring a photo ID to vote in federal elections. And yet, when that's mentioned, it's racist, it's sexist, it's homophobic. The Democratic line du jour was Jim Crow 2.0. It's mind-boggling. I don't get this. So let's start with this today. There's a lot coming up on the show today, but honestly, help me out here. And you may be a person that is against photo ID. Well, wait a minute. If you're against photo ID, then you are one of just the 24% here in Connecticut who are against it. Because here in deep, 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 deep blue, progressive, center-left leaning Connecticut, 76% of folks either strongly or somewhat support needing a government-issued photo ID to vote in federal elections. You think this would fly with a Democratic caucus up in Hartford here? Seriously, explain this to me. If these polls consistently show that large, large, large majorities of Democrats, independents, Republicans, black voters, white voters, Hispanic voters say, hey, federal election, show an ID. The same people that have to show an ID if they're cashing a check at the bank, or like I did the other day with my insurance card my ID when I went for my checkup. So, please help me here. Where is the disconnect? Why is it there is something here? And is it pure politics? Is it the sloppy accusations of racism? I don't know. Help me out here, honestly. Email is Paul, P-A-U-L, Paul at voiceofct.com. Text or talk, same number, 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. A new poll says 76% of Connecticut residents strongly or somewhat support using a government-issued photo ID to vote in federal elections. Your thoughts? What do you think about that? Even though we are constantly taught and talked to and bombarded with allegations, oh, you can't do that, that's racist. Oh, really? Because black and Hispanic people aren't smart enough to get an ID? Really? My God, can you be any more softly bigoted? And, you know, one of the most contentious topics we have, maybe in your town here in Connecticut, Fairfield County, New Haven County, whatever, and it even worms its way up to the national discussion here as to what you should have to do, whether there should be a standard federally issued U.S. voter ID that the feds can use and that your localities can use to make sure that you're a legally registered U.S. voter. And there's not a lot we can do in society, whether it's identifying ourselves, going to a bank, going to get a car loan, signing the 800 things you have to sign when you buy a house or a condo or a home. You just can't do those things without having a photo ID. Yet when it comes to voting, and I guess maybe this is because it's a Trump idea, there's an automatic tinge of racism attached to it, I don't know. But, you know, you mention that, and it's immediately said to be disenfranchising people and immediately said to be going back to Jim Crow laws. Can you be any more dismissive of what blacks had to go through in this country to attain equal footing here? Asking them to produce an ID is Jim Crow 2.0. I mean, stop. But again, people say this. But the frustrating thing to me is, and it should be to you, there's a disconnect here. And the disconnect is from largely progressive and democratic ruling class people who say, no, 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 we won't let that happen. Why? Why aren't you letting it happen? 76% of Connecticut residents, deep, deep, deep blue Connecticut, either strongly or somewhat support needing a government-issued photo ID to vote in federal elections. How do I know this? It's in today's release from the University of New Hampshire's Nutmeg State poll. And they polled a bunch of people, and you know the demographic breakdown. They listed in the end. But, of course, there is a margin of error of a few points, so it could be 4 to 5 points equal either way. But I just don't understand. Are they afraid, then, that some of their voting constituents can't get to the poll? Well, if they can't get to the polls, if they wouldn't be able to vote, how do you live your life without a photo ID? Even if you're 70 or 80 or 90 years old, is there no one in your life? Do you not have a son or a daughter or a grandson or a granddaughter or somebody at your local temple or church or mosque or synagogue who can help you with this? Because, again, I see these numbers today and I say, well, again, here is yet another poll that comes in, you know, way above 50%. And yet there are certain people, including a lot here in Connecticut, from, you know, the governor's office on down, who say, hey, if you're for this, yeah, well, we know. What do you know? Well, you might be a little racist. So according to this Nutmeg State poll here, a combined 76% of Connecticut people, when they were polled, support either somewhat or strongly. So there's two figures here. 56% strongly support, 20% somewhat support, requiring individuals to present a valid government-issued photo ID in federal elections. It's 3 out of 4 people. Only 12% strongly oppose that. Another 8% somewhat oppose it. Bunch of people aren't sure. Some people have no opinion. So why would you explain to me why you would oppose that? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Explain to me why. And take, if you can, I know that's tough for some people here, but take Mr. Trump, whether you love him or hate him, you think he's Beelzebub or the next coming of Jesus H. Christ. Take him out of the equation here. Make believe this is a nonpartisan idea. Why would you oppose that? Well, there are people on my street that don't have an ID. All right, we landed 2 men on the moon in 1969. You think we could figure out a way to get them the proper ID? I mean, this thing just confuses the heck out of me. In deep blue Connecticut, 76% either strongly support or somewhat support, requiring individuals to present a valid government-issued photo ID to vote in federal elections. How about this? Before we go to break, and we'll do some calls, you folks hanging on, we'll talk to you after the news. How about this? A combined 59%, almost 60% of people in Connecticut, would require an individual to provide physical evidence of U.S. citizenship in order to register to vote in federal elections. Oh, my God. So does that mean 60% of people in Connecticut are racist? I don't know. You tell me.